Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergy.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary. Welcome back to the show, Joseph.
Oh, it's a good pleasure to be with you, Jim.
Joseph, we're still living in an environment where we're seeing interest rates go up around the planet. Where's the latest hit, and where do we expect more?
Well, the issue is inflation, and some countries, especially in Europe, are still facing significant increases in electricity and transportation, the increases in taxes on those items, food costs are going up, wage costs have been pushing up, unions have been getting good contract, upgrades in terms of compensation. The ECB today, the Bank of England today raised interest rates by 50 basis points. We've seen 25 basis points increases in other parts, Australia, Canada. I think it was 50 in Norway as well today. And a lot of people are saying that the July number is probably July central bank meetings will probably show 25 beeps more in Canada, maybe 25 beeps in the States, and the pause or skip will be over. And the basic issue is that while the PPI, CPI numbers will look better because they're dropping off a high June number from 2022, and that's what the bulls are hoping for, and that's what the optimists are saying, why interest rates should come down and not see an increase in the July central bank meetings. But the offset is what we're seeing is significant wage inflation. Productivity is going down, and we just saw two very big contract increases. One, the West Coast of the United States dock workers, and the other one was UPS. And so the fact that we're seeing a low unemployment rate, lots more jobs openings than there are people to fill them, all of that is still weighing on the central banks. And until they see some slack, let's use the word slack, in the jobs market, they're going to still be forced to think about inflation rather than the areas that are showing slowdown, like the CPI, PPI, in the near term. My concern, though, is if we do see higher energy prices in the latter part of the year, and my forecast is that we'll see over $80 during Q3, WTI price, U.S. crude, over $80, and I think during Q4, we'll see WTI over U.S. 90, and that will then push those CPI and PPI numbers back up. And if we have issues with drought this year, where there's the water tables are low, as we know, across Canada and the States, and the weather is ridiculously hot. Texas is already warning of brownouts and telling people in the late afternoon, evening, not to use so much electricity because they could be more than peaked out. If they do, then they have rolling brownouts. And so we're looking at issues here that can have a major impact on inflation going out 2 or 3 months, while the June data coming out in early July will probably be favorable. The later months could be quite unfavorable.
Well, is that what Texas gets to pay for now because they decided not to join the national power grid?
Yeah, they go their own way, and they have the Railway Commission handling production, and they've never wanted to be part of the grid, and And it's a problem that has never found a solution because Texas wants to do its own thing.
Now, we have international pressures as well, the conflict in Ukraine, China, Taiwan, and now we find out China's building a major military base in Cuba. That has the Americans pretty upset. What is this, 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis all over again?
Well, they're not bringing nuclear weapons into Cuba, so I don't think it's the same thing. But it's more of the fact that the United States was the only superpower out there, and China, with three times the population, a bigger army, probably a blue water navy that's getting as big as the U.S., submarine fleet bigger than the U.S., they're way behind in aircraft carriers, but they do want to, show their muscle and that they are the second global power in the world, superpower in the world. And they don't like it that the United States has put military troops in Taiwan. They've got them in Australia, Northwest Australia. They've got them in a number of places in the Philippines. They've got them in South Korea, Japan. So they feel that, look, you guys are all around us and surrounding us. You know, maybe we need to do the same to you to show us that, we got to start negotiating at a different level. You don't dictate to us anymore. You know, we negotiate because we're both superpowers. You may be somewhat bigger still, but we're becoming the number two guy by a close counter. And Cuba may be just the start. They may go to Nicaragua. They could go to Venezuela. And if they bring troops and military bases in, the Americans could go ballistic. But the reality is, they're doing the same thing, and they've been doing it to China for decades.
Right. And, of course, China, with just sheer numbers and ingenuity, creating artificial islands across the Pacific, they could eventually end up with bases off Seattle and L.A.
Well, I'm not sure they could do that, but they're definitely doing them close to the Philippines and Vietnam. Yeah. And Papua New Guinea and the other players in the area, and of course there's fishing rights, there's potential hydrocarbons offshore, and that's causing a lot of consternation. Philippines was getting closer to China, and now the new Marcos government is now moving back to being pro-U.S. They were trying to throw off the Americans, during the his dad's time and afterwards, because the Americans had Subic Bay and all those military bases in the Philippines under, the General Douglas MacArthur, but more importantly from when his father pushed out the Spanish. So we're, you're looking now at a, I think that this is serious, and I think the Americans are having to realize it's not just all their ballgame.
We'll have more with Joseph Schachter right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Joseph Schachter. Joseph, what's happening with relations between Alberta and Ottawa now that Danielle Smith, the United Conservative Party leader, is the new premier, elected premier of Alberta, not just appointed by her party?
Yeah, it's, you read stuff in the paper and you think that there's going to be a major confrontation coming up. But I think that, the way she won the election was, was when she showed that the NDP, when they were in power, weren't so good. And that, yes, they've made mistakes in the UCP, but she's listening. She did very well on the debate. She never got caught up in any of the push from the NDP to get her to lose her patience. And she answered questions, and people supported her after that. I think that, she's going to take a lighter hand versus the confrontation she may have used when she was running for the leadership and getting rural Alberta on side. She now has to represent, a left-wing Edmonton, half left-wing Calgary, and a full right-wing rural Alberta. And I think that she's going to try to, skate her way through that. But at the same time, stand up for what most of the people in Alberta would consider Alberta rights or provincial rights under the Constitution.
Now, the whole issue of getting Alberta's crude and natural gas out across the ocean to markets, Europe and Asia would love to have more of our natural gas. Are we building the terminals, or have we missed the boat and the U.S. and Australia are going to pick up that?
Well, I think going to Europe is a problem because nothing's going to go on through Quebec and into New Brunswick, and the infrastructure is not there to do it in any meaningful way. But to the West Coast, we're going to have Trans Mountain, one of the most expensive, stupid projects in terms of management of the process that we've ever seen in Canadian history. But we are going to see more LNG on the West Coast. We're hearing more and more about the projects moving through the approval phases on the environmental side, provincially with BC, and then to the federal side. First Nations are on side for the projects, which is, of course, a positive. The other thing is, of course, we can move oil down south. You saw that Gibson recent acquisition, and Enbridge has been very big on building up export capacity on the Gulf Coast. So we could move oil south by pipeline or by rail, but hopefully by pipeline because it's cheaper and more environmentally safer. I think that we still have growth opportunities. But I think that, compared to the U.S., let's say the LNG potential on the U.S. Gulf Coast, they're going to do much better because they're right there. We've got to ship it from Western Canada down to the Gulf Coast. That's costly. Getting contracts, you have to be very big as a producer, a natural gas producer, to do it. So far, we've only seen Tourmaline and ARC able to do that. So smaller operators can't do that, and they're all hoping that, once we get a couple, let's say LNG Canada Phase 2 approved, and we end up getting, the Enbridge-sponsored project, the Pembina-sponsored project going forward, that the demand increase of 6-7 BCF on top of 16 or so BCF produced now will give a shot in the arm to the industry. But the prices have to be much higher than they are. The $255, $260 or so where NYMEX is today is not sufficient to justify doing LNG projects. We're going to need $4, $5, $6 gas, with a sustainable $4 average for the year to be able to see the industry spend enough money to bring on enough production and for the LNG operators to spend the money to build the onshore or offshore facilities and the shipping that's going to be needed.
Does Canada really need to expend $11 to $13 billion at a time to have EV battery plants here?
Well, the issue is it was supposed to be that plant was supposed to go into Quebec, but they didn't have enough electricity. Do they cut off New York State with the contracts they have? Do they change their mind on natural gas and go to cogen, which is what Ontario has done, and Ontario has nuclear power. Ontario won that one. The amount of money that's being spent, the industry, if they really want to be in there, I don't think they need these kinds of subsidies, but because the U.S. has thrown so much money under their Inflation Reduction Act and all their other, crazy spending, juggernauts by Biden, Canada has to compete if we want to have the jobs. And so, the Canadian government got pushed into a corner would have cost less in Quebec, and Quebec would have paid more of the bill to help out. But now that's gone to Ontario, and the feds are writing the check or will write the check. But again, the cost of these things are obscene. And, the question is this the technology that's going to be there for the next 30, 40, 50 years? Or will battery technology improve over time? And maybe this is a white elephant.
Well, in Britain, I don't know how well it's worked out. They plan to put a green strip on their freeways, the motorways they call them, that would charge your EV as you drove. But apparently it doesn't work well in wet or snowy weather, which would make it almost useless in Canada.
I would, Yeah, well, and also remember how long that people who have EVs now, Teslas or whatever, that in the winter the charge doesn't hold as much, and so you've got to go to the charging station more often.
And I also wonder, too, why natural gas vehicles have fallen out of favor. I would have put a compressor on my natural gas line at home and just gassed up at home, avoiding all the road taxes. And also, as we go to electrical vehicles, without the gasoline tax revenue, the government's going to find a way to tax your vehicle, which probably means a yearly mileage charge.
Well, the one thing that's going to shock Canadians is when we get to July 1st and the next carbon taxes come on, we could be looking at 15 cents more per liter across Canada. So that could be a 10% that's a 10% increase in Alberta. In Europe, they've lowered carbon taxes, because it's impacting the economies there.
Now, for the oil patch itself in Alberta, how's that doing?
Well, the oil patch is slowed down, more in the States than Canada. The rig count came out today, last week, Friday, and the U.S. rig count is 687, down from 740 a year ago. The Canadian rig count is 159 versus 156, so we're holding our own, and the industry is drilling for liquids-rich natural gas, the condensate, because that's needed to move the heavy oil, and they're looking at light oil, and they're looking at the heavy oils, from the plays that everybody likes there. So we're holding our own. We're not yet at peak, capacity, which will be around 200 rigs versus that 159 during the summer when we get to very, very active. But I think that, we need higher natural gas prices, to really, quick start the drilling that's going to be needed in Northwest Alberta and Northeast BC, especially Northeast BC, if they're going to meet the gas demand for LNG Canada Phase 1 alone.
Joseph, what else should we be keeping a close eye on right now?
I'm concerned about, the potential of some misadventure on the military side, either in the Black Sea, as we talked earlier with Ukraine, where blockade could happen, but also with Taiwan, where if there's some kind of a blockade or some kind of instance where, the United States and China have some kind of a, confrontation, a small to medium one, the shipping lanes there transport over 50% of the crude oil from the Middle East to Japan, South Korea, China, etc. And if there is any problems with it, the cost of insurance will go up, and of course any attacks on any shipping, energy shipping, fossil on the LNG side or the oil side, could spike prices up. And that could be something very detrimental to economic activity and to the market psychology. It would be positive for energy prices, but the question is for how long. Just like when Russia invaded Ukraine, we saw a massive spike in the prices, $130 on the price of WTI, but it quickly came down, and we're now looking around a 68.5, 69 level for WTI. So, again, softer economy and the demand down from 22 versus 23, and also the issue of the stagnant growth in China or lack thereof, all of those have dampened the price of oil. I'm thinking in the next 30, 60 days we may see 65, 66 again. We're not far off that. That'll bring the stocks down. But from my point of view, that's going to be the next great buying opportunity. So hopefully the next time you and I are talking, we're saying that the sector is extremely cheap and people should be buying. And, that's my view right now, that we'll be saying markets are very, very cheap. Stocks are down another 10-15% from where they are today on the energy sector side. And that would provide tremendous bargains for investors, like we saw in mid-March when you and I were talking then, and I said we were at a table-pounding buy opportunity. We had a nice bounce off that, and now we're backing off again, and the next buying opportunity could be the next 30 to 60 days.
Joseph, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Oh, my pleasure as always, Jim.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from Calgary. If you have any questions for Joseph or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on Twitter at HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.